Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 13 minutes after 9 o'clock on a kind of a drab Wednesday morning, but we'll try to liven things up here. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Today we're joined by Rosemary Armeo of the University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here, chipper and ready to go. Corporate attorney Rich Honan, never been accused of being chipper, is also here. Rich, nice to have you here.
What's up?
And then there's Alan. It's an old sitcom from the 50s. And then there's Alan. He's are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound great. Well modulated today, sir.
Yesterday, a couple of people wrote in and said, "Take Alan's coffee away from him."
Really? Yeah. Okay. Are you on the caffeinated stuff?
No. Oh no.
So I mean, what difference does it make? It's like taking Alan's water
away.
They
were trying to say.
Well, that's okay, man. I guess you were feisty yesterday. We'll try to calm you down today. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to weigh in today. And a number of things going on in the world, and then we'll get to our usual political rancor. Turkish officials have raised the number of Syrians being treated in Turkey after a suspected chemical attack to 58. A statement from the governor's office for the border province of Hatay said Wednesday the victims are being treated in several state and private hospitals. EU Council President Tusk has condemned the suspected chemical attack. It's killed at least 72. Tusk said Wednesday that the Syrian regime bears the primary responsibility for the atrocities, but also blamed supporters of President Bashar Assad's government, who said share the moral and political responsibility. Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting that Russian officials blamed Syrian rebels for the chemical attack. Syrian rebels say they don't have the capabilities to produce the chemical weapons. Who wants, Rosemary, you want first on this?
Yeah, I do. I think, if you want to start with blame, I think it's ridiculous that the Trump White House is immediately going after Barack Obama. Yes, he put the line in the sand on the last chemical attack 4 years ago and then didn't follow through. I think that was bad, although no one's come up with a better solution for Syria. This is on him, and he needs to deal with it. I think that you're seeing everybody blaming each other. There's at least as much possibility that this attack was brought on by the Assad government with the encouragements of the Russians, who now have agreement with the Americans under Trump. At any rate, you've got children dying. The video is extraordinarily difficult to watch.
Yeah.
It's just awful. And we need to go in there and do something. And I think the UN should be under the auspices of the UN. The United States has not been involved in the latest talks that have Syria, Iran, and Russia in. We need to be in there and stopping this. That's my opening round.
Alan, I thought that the chemical, yeah. when the red line was crossed and Assad said, hey, all of our chemical weapons are now gone. I thought they were all gone. If the rebels, in fact, don't have the capability of producing that, then somebody is not telling the truth here.
Well, I would think on the face of it, somebody is not telling the truth, and we have to presume that it's Assad. However, there is something that has been bothering me about all of this, and that is that, let's see now. The Syrians are clients, right, of the Russians.
Right.
The president of the United States, who is blaming Obama, comes into office and says, Putin is a good man, Putin is a good man, Putin is a good man. We know that. Now, if you're Assad and you think now that the United States, which has been talking about lines in the sand and holding you responsible, is basically changed to the point where we are now Russian backers, then they could proceed with impunity, which I think is exactly what has happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the president now comes back, and what does he say? He says, this president says, this is bad. You shouldn't drop chemicals on other people, but it's really Obama's fault. No, Mr. President, it's your fault because of all the Russian stuff, because that's what led Assad to believe that he could act any way he wanted.
Rich Honan, I think you may want to have at this.
Yeah, I think
Alan's got it backwards. I think Rosemary had it. Made more sense. Certainly, I don't think any thinking person believes that Obama handled both the red line comment and the aftermath in any kind of effective way. And I think the record clearly bears out that he makes the red line comment in August of 13, and by October of 13, Kerry is claiming victory over this deal that Putin brokered regarding the ostensible elimination of the nuclear weapon. Of the chemical weapons. It's clear that that was a huge misstep by the Obama administration. But
which is over.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. And you can't blame. Listen, I can find a way to blame almost anything on Obama, including traffic on I-90.
I feel the same way about Bush. Right. So, okay, you're forgiven.
And right. So did President Obama. Up to the end.
But even having said all that. The roots of this is, the Syrian civil war that started with, the atrocities committed by the Assad regime. I think what Alan has wrong is, of course, the Russians are in there. I believe that the Russians were basically invited in by the United States after they left the void. But the other big player is, Hezbollah is fighting side by side with the Russians. There was a big story yesterday about how Hezbollah is—they're taking over houses there, and they had some kind of military kind of cortege there where it's something that's supposedly not done in a foreign country. You're not supposed to have kind of military homage to your troops when you're in a foreign country. But they're there. We now realize that one of the reasons that the Obama administration backed off is they were secretly, clandestinely negotiating this deal with Iran. Iran has a couple hundred billion dollars. Hezbollah is there. It's very difficult. And now I think everybody has pretty much, everybody's come to the conclusion, Rosemary, that this whole idea of Assad has to go is a prerequisite. I think most of us have given up on that, right?
Well, Trump has certainly given up on it. And Rich, we talked yesterday on the show about contortionists, and you've given us a demonstration of that today, going way out of your way to find an explanation when you have Assad, who has a record. The last time he had a rebel-held area and he wanted to loosen it up, he dumped chemicals on it. Wow, same thing. Why would you excuse Assad? He now feels empowered to do what he wants, and so he's attacked his people again.
I don't know. I thought what I said was the crux of the problem started with Assad and his regime's atrocities.
Alan, I think you wanted to jump in here.
Disagrees.
I did. And not only that, but I want to point out that the television stations, on our MSNBC and CNN have been pointing out this morning and playing Trump's earlier utterances when running about Syria and saying, leave Syria alone, leave Syria alone. So you can't really have it both ways. This morning he's saying, oh, they shouldn't do that. But it has all the force of a wet noodle as far as I'm concerned. And Rich, I just think you're plain wrong.
All right, on that happy note, let's take a quick break here. I see the Vox Pop line is ringing. I just want to make it clear, it's not a call-in show, but if you want to make a comment, you can email us, panel@wamc.org. Try to keep it brief. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stand by, people. Oh, we're on the air. Stand by. Good thing Rosemary didn't swear. We're all set. It's 23 minutes after 9 o'clock.
I only did that once. I'm never going to hear the end
of it. I liked it. It was funny.
You only
radio.
Did it once on air.
It taught us a lesson about technology, and it's the roundtable panel. It's panel@wamc.org. Alan is here. Rich Honan is here. Rosemary is here. The missile in North Korea's latest launch didn't fly very far, but it may have been the second test of a technology that worries experts. The Wednesday morning launch into the waters off North Korea's east coast came shortly before President Trump's first summit meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping later this week, and spell it if you wish, raising speculation that it might have been time to get their attention. Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, says the United States has spoken enough about North Korea. In reaction to the missile launch, the State Department issued a terse statement from America's top diplomat acknowledging yet another launch and saying we have no further comment. A senior White House official yesterday, quoting here from CNN, said the clock has now run out. All the options are on the table. That's ominous. Anybody want in?
I think even more ominous is Tillerson's statement, right? I mean,
he's talking.
Yeah, his job is to talk. I mean, he's the Secretary of State. His job is to engage in diplomacy. You know, even beyond it could possibly help. And he says we give up.
I find it really hard to judge whether this is time to my nails are bitten off. Whether that's legitimate and we should be very worried, or if this is just theatrics. If it's saber rattling, you've got China coming in,
right,
and now we're talking tough about this, or is it a third scenario? Wag the dog. Remember that movie?
Sure.
Where what a lovely diversion from treason with the Russians to be talking about we have to defend our country against North Korea.
So Donald Trump fired the missile off the East?
No, but he's accelerating the belligerence.
Alan.
To say nothing of the Trump numbers going into the toilet. I mean, really going low. Now, and I wouldn't be, I think Rosemary made a point yesterday that the Gorsuch confirmation may give him a small bump, but the numbers are going down and down and down, and it's very hard for the Republican congressmen and senators to defend it. But I wanted to ask both Rich and Rosemary, but certainly not you, Ray.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
They would do... what they would do. I mean, you're president of the United States. You can tell them what not to do. What would you do now?
I think at this point, it sounds like you have to part of your plan has got to be to start constructing or beefing up military installations in South Korea. I just don't know what else you do.
Well, they're putting the missile shield in, or
yeah,
it's in already, the high-altitude missile shield.
Right.
So Which is ticking off the Chinese. That's
correct.
For sure.
Yeah, but
that whole missile thing. Yeah. Go
yeah.
Ahead.
No, I agree. But the Chinese. That'll be an interesting meeting. The Chinese probably don't love the fact that Korea is doing all of this. And so I think everybody's looking for a way out. And I think oddly, the way out is going to be some acceleration of these military installations, along with, at the end of the day, maybe some trade type deal with China that gets right. I mean, how else to bring China to the table?
Okay, so my thinking on this is, if we want to cast blame, we could go back all through Obama and through Bush, because North Korea has been a problem at least that long, acknowledged by the American government, and then nothing done about it. We spent
Agreed.
All this time on the Middle East. This is a problem that should have been nipped in the bud years ago.
But don't you think that's the China overhang?
I do think it's okay. The China overhang. So now we have an administration in untested, unmanned, unstaffed virtually in the State Department, with a extremely weird policy, an aggressive and not thought out policy towards China, that whole movement towards Taiwan, like Taiwan's going to play a role in this. And we need China, as China, I think, does need us for trade and for other things. It would be a perfect negotiation if it had not been so muddled up to now by Trump. And he needs to undo that and convince the head of the premier this weekend to we're in this together.
I think the North Korean intentions here are the interesting thing, because clearly at some point China is going to say enough is enough. And at what point does North Korea continue to push the envelope where China then puts the hammer
down?
Okay,
so here's my extreme conspiracy theory, that North Korea knows exactly what it's doing and China knows exactly what they're doing. And part of the bargain is going to be, those military installations in the South China Sea that we want.
Right.
America is opposed to them. Suddenly America's going to be for it. Watch it.
I'm with you on that conspiracy theory. I don't think that's a terribly extreme theory at all. I think that's part of what's going on. I will, because it's my job here to always take a shot at the previous administration. I will say that part of what happened under previous administrations is when nation states acted badly, say like Iran, we ended up in kind of bilateral talks with them. And I think that's one of the things that Korea has been trying to do here, saying, if we make ourselves enough of a pest, maybe we can get a deal akin to, the kind of deal that Iran got. I think
that'd be good. Why are we not doing that?
I mean, the blame game gets tiring. I mean, you can go back to the Eisenhower administration. Don't you think?
Here's the other thing. Trump is going to see this now. It's not like you get one crisis to deal with at a time. So, yeah, North Korea was a mess all during Obama's administration, but not so hot a war as in Syria.
Right.
And you have South Korea imploding. They had a big political crisis that resulted in ousting their president. And North Korea changed leaders. So there was a reason to not act decisively then.
We have about 30 seconds here. Alan, I'll let you get the last word in here before news break.
Well, yeah. I think that the Trump administration made it clear when Trump was coming in that he didn't like China that much, and he was taking shots at China, and he was patting Putin on the head. And I think you have to understand that when you say there may be some deal in which they give them the islands in the China Sea, I don't think so. I think this guy has been identified as a real bad guy, by the president, and I don't think there's going to be much give.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Wednesday morning, 9:33. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We have Alan Shartok on the panel, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan, who didn't dance, but sort of, I don't know what that was. You were waving your arms.
He bounced.
Jazz hands. It's very disturbing. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we have letters. So let's read a few and then move on to the next thing. This one's from Maureen. We're talking about the use of chemical weapons on children in Syria, and Rich, you and your party and your president want to talk about blaming President Obama. Disgusting and very poor taste and not useful. And that's from Maureen. Brucey, Cousin Brucey, says, please stop talking about Obama, Obama, Obama. This is about Trump and the chaos he's fomenting globally and domestically. Alan will like this one. This is from Dan. The subject heading, Alan is spot on. And it begins like this. Alan is spot on.
Good stuff.
With his analysis of Syria, and one other fact needs to be mentioned, that many Trump's tweets at the time of the red line insisting that President Trump not go into Syria. Yep, that's what he said repeatedly. Thanks and good morning. And that's from Dan. Lee in Modena says, I lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis, and when I hear reports about chemical attacks in Syria or ICBM tests in North Korea, I can hold my fears in check with the thought that the president, though not perfect, will nonetheless assemble around him wise people to defuse the situations.
Oh, wait. Brother.
Obama
Trump.
Isn't. Okay, and thank you, Lee.
That was funny.
Setting up Rosemary there. Joy says the United Nations is discussing about what to do in Syria, according to the report from the BBC on your station. Their actions are always ineffective. Mike says, to blame Trump is ludicrous. Assad has used chemical weapons with no worries ever since the red line was crossed with no reaction. Remember, Obama started the mess in Syria, Libya, Yemen by funding terrorists.
Are you aware of other chemical attacks since the alleged ban of chemical weapons?
One of the stories said that chemical, and I'm just telling you what I read in one of the stories, and it might have even been either the Times or the Post.
So it must be true.
Yeah, but I thought one of the stories said that chemical attacks are not unusual, except that they're usually very, very
localized.
Restricted and localized. So I was surprised to read that.
I need to search that. I'm unaware of it. Well, certainly this is huge, and that may be the reason it's getting the attention. But I thought it had been stopped since the alleged ban.
Hmm. Stephen in Lee says, I want to know, what good is it to have and use nuclear weapons? Is it to kill a lot of people because you don't like their government policies, or to take over a country that would be useless afterwards? I just don't get it. And that's from Stephen.
I mean, it's supposed to be the ultimate weapon, so horrifying that just the threat of it stops action, in the same way that we call, in the Senate now, we call it the nuclear option.
Yeah. Right.
Even though it's a change in the rules that could be undone at some time
right.
in the future.
Yeah, and in our day they called it MAD, Mutually Assured Destruction.
Yes, I remember
Alan?
That.
Except the thing that is so disturbing about this one is, even if we demonize Kim in North Korea, is that he really truly may be a madman.
Many people think that about Trump, though.
No, I know. But if he is a madman, and he is willing to go down with the ship, because he certainly will, because it seems to me that that's what makes this a real nail biter.
I don't buy it.
I actually do buy it. I actually agree with Alan because, you know, when we were talking about mutually assured destruction back from, you know, it was the Soviets against the United States. And even then, you know, with Khrushchev and Kennedy, the idea was that when faced, you know, when looking into the abyss of nuclear weapons, that somebody would back off. And I just don't know that you have that kind of confidence with somebody like the ruler of North Korea.
He's a little, I mean, clearly a little bent. One of the senators, maybe it was McCain, called him fat in the last week or two. Crazy fat kid. And he threatened war over that.
I just find it amazing that we're calling that president crazy when we have a guy who does exactly the same thing. Our president threatened war when Iran fired a warning shot across the bow of a ship in the Middle East. You remember that? It's the same thing. And what you're leaving out is China, who could stop North Korea in a second when and if it chooses to.
I think the extent of Rosemary's hyperbole speaks for itself there.
Alan.
Sorry.
Okay, that's snotty. We don't need snotty. But my question here is, does China really have that influence?
Yes.
They do. The question is, do they want to use it?
Yeah.
And I think they kind of are using it.
Well, that is one question.
I think they're going to get what they want from the United States, and then suddenly you're going to see North Korea stand down.
Interesting. This one's from Alan. Well, could your panel please try to explain what motivation Assad would have to attack his own people? What reason? I think it is because he is at heart a Western-educated secularist determined to wipe out Islamic extremists, a goal long held by Russia. And that's from Alan, not our Alan, but another Alan.
We were talking about that off air because I brought up, you know, do you think Assad did this? Or somebody setting up Assad, and you know, it seems like the consensus is no. He's showing his power.
He has been in a civil war for 6 years. He has no problem whatsoever killing his own citizens if they're on the wrong side. And these are people in a rebel-controlled area, he wants to wipe it out. He did it with Aleppo. It's the exact same thing. He's
a
power-hungry crank.
I agree, but don't you think that any time that Russia and Iran decide that. They're done using Assad for their purposes. Don't you think he's out?
Yep, absolutely.
Right.
He's an egomaniac. Do you think he thinks that, Rich?
No, he doesn't. But I'm saying that could, if you want to go into the conspiracy theories, then I could start constructing a theory where, you know, either with the help or knowledge of Hezbollah or Russia, this happens. Pressure is put on everybody to get rid of Assad, and then somehow Putin ends up profiting somehow from having moved Assad out.
Well, it's easy how Putin it gets an advantage. It's his stronghold. He has none right now in the Middle East.
Yeah.
That would be it, Syria.
Karen, go ahead, Alan.
I just wanted to go back to
my
dismissal on the idea that by both the other very good panelists
that was a shot.
Right. And you can see it coming, much like you could see a missile coming. I don't know. I'm not willing to assume, as you guys are, that Kim isn't crazy enough so that the Chinese are more worried about him than you think, that they don't have the kind of control which you absolutely assure me that they do with him. I'm not sure of that. If the guy is really insane, and I think he is, then anything could go. Now, with Putin and Assad, yeah, there's a client relationship there. There's no doubt about it. But this other thing really bothers me a great deal.
Karen in Woodstock writes, Obama didn't make a decision unilaterally to avoid involvement in Syria. He met with his generals regularly to discuss all options, and they agreed with him that there are no good options.
Correct.
Trump is, among many other odious things, a total hypocrite. He kept saying, stay out of Syria. He's unbelievable. Meanwhile, Hillary wanted a no-fly zone, which experts are now discussing. That's from Karen in Woodstock. And finally here of the emails, Jim, if anything truly makes me anxious about the Trump presidency, having this motley crew of complete amateurs in diplomacy during any sort of crisis with a rogue nation like North Korea would pretty much be it.
Yep.
As opposed to the well-oiled diplomatic machine we had for 8 years, where peace reigns supreme across the world.
Except, fine, that's over now. Now you got what you want. Show us what you can do. And everything you said, Alan, I agree with, except I would substitute the name of Trump for Kim.
And the email address, once again, is panel@wamc.org. A top Obama national security advisor says it's absolutely false that the previous administration used intelligence about President Trump's associates for political purposes. Susan Rice says it was sometimes necessary for her to request the identity of Americans whose communications were swept up in intelligence reports. She says the requests were only made for national security purposes. According to a U.S. official, Trump national security aides discovered that Rice requested the identities of Trump campaign advisors. Rice on MSNBC would not say whether she had viewed intelligence involving Trump and his aides. She said that information is classified. Quoting the New York Times here, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky called the reports a smoking gun and said Ms. Rice should be subpoenaed to testify. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said Congress should look into the reports. Rice denied that she leaked information to the press, saying, "I leaked nothing to nobody." We can parse the English on that one. I'm not sure if that's exactly right, but we get the point.
The Trump White House is in such trouble over all of this that they are looking for anything they can possibly find that implicates the Democrats so they can say, well, then they did it too, and what we did was not so bad. But the fact of the matter is they keep trying it, and the more they play that card, the more they try, the more I think that people just shrug and say, there he goes again.
Okay, I have 2 points. One is the Obama administration already said and has acknowledged that it was looking in and was aware of collusion between the Trump team and Russia. So why is it such a big deal that their national security officer would be trying to figure out what Americans, Russians they were spying on, were talking to? I don't get the import of it, even if it turns out to be true. And number two is, wow, how lucky Trump is that it's Susan Rice again. They just say that name and images of Benghazi and bad stuff come flying to the minds of people like Rand Paul and Rich Honan. Susan Rice, because she was such a player, supposedly, in Benghazi.
And what did she do?
She talked about the talking points of Benghazi, and one of them was that it was a video produced in America that set off people.
She said our intelligence indicates that it was based upon this video. Now, remember, this was during the Obama-Romney campaign. Now, the intelligence reports didn't say that, did they?
I don't recall what they said anymore. It's all been so obfuscated. I do remember that Susan Rice was extremely ineffective. She stuck with talking points long after everybody else had said, no, we have new information. Here it is. I think she's a really ineffective government official, and I think she's going to hurt Democrats again.
All right, let's take a quick break. I think Rich may want to weigh in on this. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:45. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. We're talking about Susan Rice, and Rand Paul wants to subpoena her to testify about what she knew and if she unmasked the identities of those caught up in legal surveillance. And I know Rich Honan didn't get a chance to speak in the last break. Rich, you go ahead.
Well, Rosemary called this a couple of weeks ago, and just to review the chronology, Trump made his claim that, Obama was wiretapping me, and I didn't ever take that to mean that Obama himself was sitting with, a pair of headphones, clipped to the wire. Van being driven by Valerie Jarrett. But the
I wish you were here, Alan. I'm surrounded by these people.
I just did a spit take. That was funny.
Yes, you are.
But yes, you are.
One of whom is overt. The other of whom, is a little under the covers. But we can smell it, can't we, Rosemary?
I'm overwhelmed.
But Rosemary called
this,
when the denials weren't really, full denials. And Rosemary said, I think that, they probably know that somebody somewhere was listening to something. I'm paraphrasing.
It's true. You're not mischaracterizing it.
Yeah. And I agreed with her then. I agree with her now. And yes, Susan Rice, who's basically the designated liar for the Obama administration.
Oh, my God. This is with an administration that has Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer. And you're talking about, oh, my gosh.
Now, when you get to the seventh inning, when you couldn't find anybody within the administration to actually carry that out, that they tap on their arm and bring her out. So, she doesn't have a lot of credibility, but you could certainly understand that she'd be the one who ordered the quote, or I guess requested the unmasking. I guess she can't order it herself.
I don't think she, it was routine. If you're in her job and you have Russians who you're spying on and they're routinely talking to Americans, you don't want to know who they are?
No, that's not how the process works.
You said she went in and said, find me some Trump people talking to the Russians.
No. I think what happened, and I know what happened because this is what when Comey testified and said that, you know, the White House, and he made an interesting statement, the White House is a client. It's a consumer. So what happened was when this information, back in the time, there were only three intelligence agencies that got access to this raw data, and they would decide who to mask and unmask if they thought it was part of their investigation. Then they would send it on.
You know what? You know what? You're all falling for it. Ken wrote us a note, and he said, Donald, you brought it. You own it. I agree with that. Stop with the Susan Rices and the rest of the stuff. He's going down. He's sinking. He knows it. He keeps trying the thing that worked in the election, which is to go out after Obama or Hillary or the rest of it. It just stinks. It's pathetic. He's the president of the United States. He wanted to be president of the United States, and he cannot handle it in any way.
Alan,
we know that now.
Alan, you have have no issue about the National Security Advisor engaging in what sounds like partisan politics. You have no issue. How do you explain what Evelyn Farkas said a couple of weeks ago, said that's why you have all the leaking? How do you explain Susan Rice asking for unmasking of somebody that the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA didn't need to unmask because they knew it was
there
not part of their investigation?
Again.
No, and how do you explain? And then how do you explain?
You go.
I let him finish, and then you can go.
There you go.
And then how do you explain the action taken in the last eight days of the Obama administration, where he said, "Okay, now we're going to give this information to 16 different agencies," and so I believe the one true thing Susan Rice said was, of course she didn't leak the names. She didn't have to. She unmasked the names, and then she and Obama opened up the flow of information from three agencies to 16, and lo and behold, we've already had leaks.
Interesting.
And
right,
why is this a bad thing that we find that the Trump team is colluding with the Russians and Trump is coming in, so Obama lets the information out so it can be handled correctly, and we get to hear more about it than we would have otherwise. This is not a bad thing.
Colluding is a strong word. Now, have we seen actual evidence of collusion? Has the FBI and the NSA said they have collusion?
The point is, by definition, it's not, because if this had been what one of the investigative agencies thought was a collusive conversation, they would have identified the person in the first place. You wouldn't have had to ask them to be unmasked. That's the issue.
We don't know that didn't happen. Right?
We know that didn't happen because she admitted to the unmasking.
Alan, your turn.
So the hell what? That's my position on
this. Very nice.
So what? You know, come on, Rich. You know what's happening here. Your guy is caught. There's no two ways about it. He's sinking like a rock. They're looking around for anything that they can find. And this is and I don't want anybody to be buying it. I say, OK, goodbye. So long. Rosemary was right on the money. So she did what she did. It was the right thing to do at the time. And get on with it, Trump. See if you can run the country, which you cannot do, obviously.
Well, it seems like all the threads of this story, from the Russia angle it all seems to be tying together now. Yesterday, Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee said he believes some of President Trump's associates will, quote, end up in jail when the Russia-related investigations are completed. Speaking on CNN, Texas Representative Joaquin Castro wouldn't say whom he believes could be charged with a crime or why. He says that based on unspecified evidence he has seen thus far, his impression is that some people will face charges. Castro is a member of the House Committee investigating Russian meddling.
Why do you think Flynn is asking for immunity? Come on, one and one makes two.
I do agree with that on the one and one making two thing.
We have agreement on a mathematical issue.
All right.
Yes. I think there's a lot there. You asked me, Ray, if there was evidence of collusion. I don't fully know the legal term. I know that there's tons of smoke here and that an investigation needs to be continued, many investigations apparently, to look for fire. I think that there's lots of business and political connections between Trump his family, members of his team, and Russians. And yes, they all did work together in a way that helped him win the election.
Now, let me ask the lawyer a question here. We had Joaquin Castro, Texas congressman, saying he believes someone is going to end up in jail. He is on the same committee that Nunes is on. And he, Nunes, of course, asked to recuse himself from the committee for spilling the beans about the stuff he had seen.
Yeah, he's so about as clumsy as Susan Rice.
But should Castro, in fact, recuse himself from any future investigation on this?
Yeah, that's a pretty curious statement.
I never heard such a softball question in my life. You guys are playing together. You may as well get out in the backyard and start tossing the ball around.
Really?
Alan, do you think that was a proper statement for the congressman to make?
I think everybody's talking too much, Rich.
I agree with Rosemary.
I think everybody, except for us, we're not talking enough. But everybody on these committees, just
shut up and do your job.
The word is no comment.
And if the indictments come, then the indictments come and they speak for themselves.
Right. And Comey should have followed that too. I mean, if you want to get back to it, why did he announce?
Hill, right? He had to speak.
Why did he have to announce that Hillary Clinton is under investigation but not her opponent? We keep saying, oh, well, Comey says it, so it must be so. I don't get his motivations or lack of motivation. I don't get it at all. What are the rules? What are the rules? Do we talk about an investigation or not? And if we do, what are the circumstances? And why did Hillary's investigation fit those circumstances, but not Trump's? I don't get any of it.
The email address here is a panel at WAMC.org, and this one is from, quote, a thinking millennial. You guys have said China has some influence over North Korea. I try to read up on current events. Sadly, there is just so much these days. Could you quickly review what such influence China has over North Korea? Love the show, as always.
It's a major trading partner.
Yeah, it's the biggest trading partner.
Giant country right on its
border. Their only trading partner.
Virtually, yeah.
And you'd think that the intelligence apparatus of China being what it is, you know, Kim Jong-un couldn't go to the restroom without the Chinese being aware of it.
Correct.
This is from Eric in Hopewell Junction. Russia or Putin's lies that Syrian rebels' chemical weapons cause death is ridiculous. Syria is well known to have and to have used chemical weapons on their own people in the past. Russian lies and spin. Give me a break.
I think everybody agrees with that letter, right? Nobody buys that it was the rebels.
Yeah, that's... it's like the Jews caused the collapse of the towers in New York.
Right.
It's crazy conspiracy stuff.
This one is from Gobsmacked in Chatham.
Oh, nice.
Well, thank God Kushner is fixing everything. Opioid abuse, criminal justice system, reforming the government, Office of Innovation. Oh, and Middle East peace. Rich, please tell me you are not horrified. Gah! I'm gobsmacked.
I'm horrified that people are still actually talking about Middle East peace, actually. Horrified is not the right word, but why is it that everybody feels this need to somehow force peace upon the Israelis and the Palestinians? And I don't know if it's part of the, right? I mean, neither side seems particularly open to having discussions. And
peace is a good thing, right? Can we all agree on that?
Yeah, in general,
I agree.
But the process of getting there seems to be pretty impossible, but everybody feels like they have to undertake it. And I wonder if part of that is the whole narrative that they buy into, that somehow all of this is because all of this extremism, the narrative goes, is because of the whole Israeli-Palestinian, you know, conflict. And if that went away, this would all go away. And I just think
Is it possible the answer to your question is because people are dying on both sides? That's why it's so important.
I understand why it's important. I don't understand why these third party entreaties are believed to have any effect. I think Thomas Friedman said a long time ago. He said, "Listen, when you guys want to have peace, call us and we'll help."
Yeah. Here's my view. I think that the Israeli-Palestinian dispute, the creation of Israel, is at the base of all of this trouble since the 1940s. Absolutely. But if that were solved tomorrow, would it now resolve everything else? I don't think so. I think we've moved beyond it. You have Saudi Arabia and Iran and Syria, Russia in Syria, all as players in the area now, which we did not have in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, I'd argue that there was Islamist infighting going on for 2,000 years, and if the Palestinians had their way and Israel was taken off the map Then the next thing that the fundamentalists would want is, well, now America has to be taken off the map. Well, and then once America's taken off the map, then it has to be the Shiites versus the Sunnis, and one of them has to be taken off the map. Well, and I just don't think that you ever get there.
As usual, I think that you're putting way too much emphasis on the extremists. They don't have as much power. Obama said this, and you gave him hell for that, too. But they don't have as much power as we like to give them. The whole art of diplomacy is not to make a complete and total resolution. It's to kick the can down the road. It's to keep relative peace till another time, cooler heads, new generation.
I agree with that.
When maybe, you know, you get a small step towards resolution. That's why a military solution is so satisfying for many people, but it doesn't work in most instances.
I agree, and I have no problem with assisting the parties. But I think forcing the parties to the table just has not been proven to have worked.
Alan.
Hard to argue with that.
Well, there's a great deal of truth in this, in a lot of what's been said here by Rich and by Rosemary. But then there is the issue of Ireland and Northern Ireland, right? They resolved it. They resolved it beautifully. The problem is basically off the table. There may be a little bit of flotsam and jetsam around, but basically it's off the table. So there's a pretty good example of something that worked, isn't it?
Yeah, except that I think there was a modicum more willingness of the parties in the Northern Ireland issues than there is here.
All right, we have to take a break, and we will leave it there for this time. Then you come back, we'll pick it up again. Yeah, the email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will break for news and be back. Doing the hokey pokey now? What is this music you got here? It's very interesting. I can't hear you. Oh, local guy. Great. John Menigan, bass player. Fabulous. 4 minutes after 10 o'clock, it's the round table panel. And, about 20 minutes to go. Hang in there, folks. Ray Graff in for Joe. Rosemary Armeo is here. Rich Honan and Alan Shartok. And, Alan, the letters, we have so many letters. I want to get to Gorsuch, but we'll read a couple of letters here really quickly, and then we'll get on to that. The subject heading of this one from Ken in Catskill, coup d'etat. Forgive me if you've addressed this. I can't help but to believe right-thinking people might consider it. Well, I must emphasize that I'm not in favor. Is it possible short-term? Pretty incendiary stuff.
You mean
stuff.
Here? A coup d'etat here?
Yeah, we're going to unseat Alan. Yeah, that's going to work out.
Well, I guess I meant here more in America than at AMC.
Forget I said that, Alan.
Yeah, ixnay on the
I was U-tech. Just about to sign your paycheck.
Yes. This one's from Modesto. Please let Ray run the show today, and please let Rich teach us some more. Please let him finish his points. Have a great day, folks. Looking
must
at you.
Must be a school teacher.
Looking at you, Rosemary. This one is, I don't know.
He was here the last, 2 weeks when I was away, and I saw the letters, and I listened to the podcast. I have, 2 weeks to make up for.
Really?
Yeah.
And good point.
I think you will.
Come on. Healthcare. Oh, God.
Susan Rice, this is from, I think it's Ilya. Susan Rice never lied about Benghazi. General Petraeus stood by her statement at three separate congressional hearings. He stated that he was amazed by the furor over her statements, which were in keeping with the information she was given by security agencies.
Yeah, she didn't lie. She just kept sticking with points long after they were not points anymore.
Well, this one's from Nate, who says, I love Rosemary. I agree with her opinion more than anyone else on the panel.
I love you too, Nate.
Do you want his email address? And finally, this is from Paul. I'm sad to say I have to agree with Rich on the issue of Middle East peace. I'm in my 50s, and I've been watching this all my life. I doubt that my grandchildren will ever see lasting Middle East peace. It's a depressing note to leave the letter.
That is a depressing
note.
Well,
that doesn't mean you stop. I mean, it's absurd. You have to try your best to make sure that we don't even know that all the work that all these presidents and other people have done hasn't mitigated what might have been a worse outcome, right?
There's an interesting documentary called The Gatekeepers that came out several years ago, and it was interviews with Israeli leaders and intelligence people, and they all feel like it was a terrible missed opportunity. They knew it was not right to try to occupy territory for 40 years, as it's turned out, that they got so caught up in terrorism, which we're doing now, and talking about extremism, that they didn't do the basic politics, which is make a clean division, make it two states, and we could have avoided all this So lots of missed opportunity.
Well, I think, and yeah, and I, there's a book about that too.
But yeah, also it's by, probably.
Yeah, and it's really good. And I think, but a lot of it is, like everything, if we had known it was going to be 40 years,
yeah,
you know, we
would
have done something
it.
Different,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
That's true, though.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he has the votes to bust a planned Democratic filibuster of President Trump's Supreme Court nominee as a showdown nears that could change the Senate and the court for generations. The Kentucky Republican says Democrats, quote, seem determined to head into the abyss. They need to reconsider, end quote. Democrats are making clear they have no plans to do that. They're blaming Republicans for pushing them to attempt a nearly unheard-of filibuster of a qualified Supreme Court pick. 44 Democrats intend to vote against proceeding to final confirmation on Gorsuch, which would be enough to block him under the Senate's existing filibuster rules. But McConnell intends to change that. The simple majority would be necessary to back Gorsuch and all future Supreme Court nominees. Cloture vote scheduled for tomorrow. Oh, Alan, you did a vox pop on this yesterday. I'm going to let you go first.
Well, first of all, fascinating, because there's a great article in the New York Times this morning, which basically talks about will the nuclear option be extended now that Mitch McConnell has his way. To the regular filibuster, which takes the same 60 votes to stop debate, and there is a feeling that once that happens, if it happens, which is now being denied, of course, by McConnell, and I apologize for having called him the turtle the other day.
You really didn't do that, did you?
He's what, done it.
Call him the turtle.
You called him the
turtle.
Well,
sure. Look at him. Look at him. There's no question. He looks like a turtle. But anyway, and I just apologized for it anyway.
But you did it again.
But I did it again.
All right,
yeah, that's
right.
Exactly.
Carry on.
Well, you found
me
out.
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, then it becomes the House of Representatives. In other words, an oligarchy run by McConnell. Once you say, okay, no filibuster for something that we really want, which is a Supreme Court justice, and now no filibuster on anything else, then you got one guy calling the shots as long as they have a majority, right?
Anybody want to respond?
Rosemary?
I think you should have a shot.
I would hate to think that. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd hate to think it. I think it's possible that, yeah, once you use the so-called nuclear option, you know, once you're over that hump, you know, you might start using it more and more. I think for political reasons, if nothing else, McConnell, you know, may want to try and keep a lid on that. But, you know, I don't know. Now, my understanding is the filibuster has already started, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's already filibustering?
Yes. He's been on for like, what, 7 hours?
There's a guy
hours
up
something?
There.
Yeah.
There was a guy on last
oh,
night.
Oh, no, something like 19 hours oh, when
it just
I
always makes
on.
Me
One
think
guy.
Of Mr. Smith goes to
yeah,
Washington.
Yeah, me too, in
yeah.
a good
Absolutely.
Way.
Yeah,
here's the thing. I think the nuclear option is going to be invoked, and that will make Democrats happy, the base, because it'll seem like the Democrats are being tough and not standing up to the mean old Republicans. Republicans are going to do it because they'll make their base happy. They're playing their strengths. And we, as the American people, are losing because the whole idea of that rule is that it's supposed to force you, both sides, to sit down and come up with something that's palatable. We have lost the art of compromise. I keep saying that. We are all the loser. I don't care if Gorsuch gets on. I think he is a terrible justice, but in keeping with Scalia. So we're back where we were, 5-4. The next one will be terrible. I think Trump is going to put in some... I hope he sticks with the list. At least then they're just conservative but qualified. He's capable of doing someone who's conservative and horribly unqualified. And then what happens when it's just a 50-vote margin that you need?
If you were, and I'll ask this to both of you, if you were advising Schumer, okay, you
yeah.
know, politically, wouldn't you, I would think that you give the filibuster a couple of days because you have to, right? And you let people say what they want. And then... if you know you're going to lose anyway, why would you advise him to say, all right, let's pull back and let's be the bigger person. Let's say, listen, you know, we could have kept this going, but we didn't want to really disrupt the rules of the Senate because we knew that McConnell was going to do this. And that, so make your point, step back, and then now everybody's kind of preserved their powder, kept their powder dry for the next, which I think is going to be a bigger fight.
I don't think it's enough because McConnell can use the nuclear option in the next one, which really will be a telling change.
Exactly.
But won't it be easier for him to do it then?
Schumer needs to get something for pulling back. What can he ask for McConnell that he actually could get? McConnell is in a mood, and he's got the numbers. American people gave it to him.
Right.
So what can he ask for that he would really get? I don't think Schumer, he is a very smart man. I'm sure he's calculated all this. I said yesterday I really felt for him in this. He can satisfy the base, and it comes to no good. He can cave, comes to no good. Gorsuch is still on, and the nuclear option is pulled. He's in a really bad place.
To answer your question, if I were in that negotiation, so if I'm Schumer talking to McConnell, and McConnell says, well, what does that do for me? And I would say it prevents you from having to trigger the nuclear option, which is something
I really
don't want to do, and you will owe me.
Owe him. You know, McConnell shows all kinds of signs of being a conciliatory player. First, he won't honor the President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, and he sure was conciliatory then. What makes you think that if they give in to him now, it won't be clear sailing ahead? This is the time to stand in the gate.
There you go. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. This one came in from Kyle, who says, I love when Rich can make it to the table. Thank you for being there. That's from Kyle in Irving, Massachusetts.
Thank you. Absolutely.
How about that?
Thank you for listening.
You have a fan. There's one. James in Millbrook says, I don't understand the reason for a filibuster against Gorsuch. If the votes are not there, which apparently they are not, if the Republicans can't muster 60 votes, what is the need for a filibuster?
I think Rosemary answered that. And I think the answer is, you know, you have to, it's important to your base. Remember, Schumer still has people. I don't know if he still does, but Schumer has, you know, Democrats out protesting in front of his house. Right. His base is in a mood. And I think you have to pay some homage to that.
But maybe it's just possible, Rich, that it's about being right, that Schumer is right, that McConnell has behaved abysmally, and that if you let him go this time, then he's going to be there the next time and the next time. Hey, we should all be very nice and play by the rules according to the Democrats, right? We should be nice. We should play by the rules. We shouldn't encourage them by being nasty also. In the meantime, they're nasty and they're getting away with murder, including Merrick Garland.
Alan, do you put any blame on Harry Reid for any of this?
I suppose I would not have gone in that direction. I think that precedentially, it was not a bad idea. It was not a good idea to say, okay, we want these judges so much, and Obama and McConnell is being such a what's the right word, rat about not allowing anybody to be confirmed, that we have to do it this way. And so, yeah, I think one could. It was a close call, and I'm sure he saw it as a close call.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that was good tactics but bad strategy. You know, it helped them that day, but it hurt them later.
Win the battle and not the war.
Yeah, now is later, and now it's hurting them.
This is from Dixon, who says, hello to the panelists. I'm with Rich and Ray today. I don't know on what topic.
Okay, good.
There you go. This is from Leslie, who writes, Trump apologists will destroy this country. We may have passed the point of no return. The GOP is totally complicit. The current situation proves our democracy does not have the tools to protect us from the current group of criminals. And that's from Leslie.
Oh, man, I so disagree. I mean, half of the GOP is against Trump. I mean, Trump couldn't even get his health plan done. I actually think that you could argue that the GOP is working, parts of them are working as much against him as the Democrats.
Did you really say half? Because if it were half, a lot of this nonsense wouldn't be happening. What you got is a small group on the healthcare thing of ultra-conservatives, right? Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you got some moderates who, in my opinion, some moderates, but not a lot of them, who were saying, no, I can't afford to go along with this stupid plan, because if I do, I'm out of office. But don't be telling me that we're talking about half the Republicans. They may say it to their wives or to their husbands or to their significant others, but they are not.
Or to their constituents.
They are not doing anything.
This mystifying note came in from Don. I'm going to try to parse this as I read it. Don in West Stockbridge. Well, I enjoyed the panel discussion. I'm often triggered by one ongoing aura. Please note, shaming, demonizing, deifying, and the like have never helped any troubled family system and have hurt and perpetuated violence everywhere all the time, yet none have helped find a way of living together in peace and harmony. So why does this panel continue to do the same while apparently being concerned for peace and harmony in the world? Just saying.
I think that's clear and well said. I think what he's saying is
about the panel.
We're
not a family.
Not even close. But I think what he's saying, look, if Rich and the right wing is going to spend all their time demonizing Obama, and Rosemary and the left wing are going to spend all their time demonizing Trump, you're just going to end up with infighting, and you're not going to solve any of the social issues that face the country. I think that's a fair point, if that's what he meant.
I covered this earlier. Let's all, you Democrats, let's all play nicely and give the president anything he wants, including the Supreme Court thing. No, you fight like hell because this is terrible. It's leading this country in the wrong direction, maybe even to fascism. And we sit here, and some guy, I'm sure a great guy, writes us from West Stockbridge, one of my favorite towns, and says to us, be a little bit nicer to each other, and we'll resolve it. No, the Republicans aren't letting the Democrats resolve anything right here because they have a majority in the Congress and in the Senate.
I don't think the guy's saying be nicer and we'll resolve everything. I think what he's saying is we're not going to resolve anything if we continue on this path. And I don't think he's wrong to say that.
Hey, you want to know why so many people are listening to this panel?
Yes.
I do want to know why.
I'd be fascinated to find out.
It's because there is such contentiousness about major issues which are threatening to destroy this country. That's why we had a one-day fund drive, the first day of the fund drive, $1 million in a day, the lockbox plus the other $500,000 plus the First Amendment fund, because people really are concerned that this whole country is going to hell.
I thought it was because you offered a Rich Honan dunking booth.
Did we do that finally?
Yes.
All right.
No, we didn't.
That's a great idea. You know, would you do that if we offered that? Would you do that?
Yeah, well, the whole problem here, Ray, is a matter of water displacement. Now, if you put me in that seat and you put me down, there wouldn't be that much. On the other hand...
I see. Okay, we're having a little trouble with the tie line, old boy. Looks like your connection is being cut. This is from Michael and Claverick. Rich Honan, why are you playing devil's advocate in this case? I'm standing in the middle of my kitchen scratching my head. I would say which case?
On which?
I mean, every case, clearly, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of times when I have disagreed with, you know, either what Trump or what the Republicans want to do, but I haven't disagreed yet today.
This one is from Elizabeth. The truly terrifying problem with our foreign policy is that the current administration has only one foreign policy goal, the enrichment of the Trump family. They have no interest and no experience in anything else and have starved the State Department of personnel with any other field of interest or expertise. Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, look, see, my bigger problem with the cuts to the operational budget that Trump is talking about, and obviously it sure seems like he wants to put less. You want to take that though as though he's putting less emphasis on diplomacy. I think he would say, you know, we could do diplomacy in a smarter, more streamlined way. My bigger problem is,
yeah,
I don't know why
he certainly is the guy to do. He certainly is the guy to do it, Rich. I mean, he's sending the son-in-law out. And what exactly are his qualifications? And has anybody, as a letter writer wrote today, have we ever heard him say a sentence in public? No. And yet, he thinks he knows more than the State Department, and that Jared Kushner, of all people, knows more than our seasoned diplomats.
Well, from the State Department, which also brought us, you know, ISIS, the Arab Spring, and the inflation of the Syrian civil crisis, you know, I don't think they've set a very high bar there, Alan.
What do you mean brought us? What do you mean brought us? I don't get the brought us part of this.
Had anybody heard of ISIS before 2008?
Well, there wasn't an ISIS back in the day. Now there is. And these guys come up, and there will, as I think a point you made earlier, there always will be. And then the question is how you play the carom off the wall.
Off the cushion, yeah.
In front of 80s on Fire Island, Rosemary.
Oh, I thought you were talking billiards there for a minute. I got interested
for
just a brief second.
That's where we used to play our handball. Yeah.
This is from Ann, who says, I agree with Alan. If the filibuster can be ended whenever the leader wants, it's a toothless rule now. A rule has to be respected to actually be a rule.
Alan, can I ask you, this is totally a procedural question. You might not know the end. Ray, I'm sorry. But so how did? So now you have this ability to call for cloture. How do you interrupt the filibuster? Right? Because I thought you can't.
Because there are rules. And the rules are that when it's a procedural matter, the leader can call it.
Okay.
But when it's a substantive matter, it has to be granted by the filibustering member.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Exactly.
This one's from Christine. Republicans may not like Trump, but they are complicit in the carnage that is happening with healthcare, science, the environment, etc. Silence is complicity, and that's from Christine. Suzanne says, ask Rich what he thinks about the new executive orders regarding the environmental issues. He can't possibly defend this issue.
Well,
that's from Susan.
You know, some of those executive orders are replacing executive orders that were struck down by the courts in the beginning. I will say, I'm not terribly pleased with Trump's. With Trump's use of executive orders as a way of governing, just the way I wasn't terribly pleased with Obama's either. So I agree with that. I'd rather see us proceed by legislation.
Okay, I'm going to have to call cloture here at this point. Rich
Honan,
yeah, that's it, man. Rich Honan, thank you for being here. Rosemary Armeo, I want to thank you for being here as well.
Oh, you're welcome.
She actually left a few moments ago. And Alan Shartok, thank you for being here, sir. It was wonderful as usual, sir. Sign the paycheck.
You're so welcome. I want to say one thing really, really, really fast.
Yeah.
I watch CNN while I'm doing this to see if anything's coming up, right? And they always show Mike Pence walking down a hall going into an elevator. Well, they show it again and again and again and again. And all I can think about is, where does he get his haircut?
Nice. And we'll leave it on that note. We'll more after this.